Good morning, everyone. This is the time and place set for argument in Pound for Pound Promotions versus Golden Boy Promotions, case number 73554. Are council ready to proceed? And please tell the clerk when you advance how much time you'd like to reserve for rebuttal. We are, yeah.
May it please the court, good morning. I am Mark Little, counsel for Appellant Pound for Pound. My co-counsel, Mr. Carlton Birch, is here with me. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. And I would like to start off by saying that opposing counsel and I are on good terms. And so we might say some things this morning that are a little caustic, but it's not personal.
So I take it that won't include settlement.
Yeah, well, perhaps. Perhaps. It's such a pleasure to be with you all this morning. Mm-hmm. First, I'd like to start out by way of introduction and simply say that the top 35 boxing gates in the state of Nevada show the respondent Golden Boy promoted or co-promoted 16 of these. Their take here in Nevada has been approximately $197 million. Between 2012 and 2016, the State of Nevada Athletic Commission shows that Golden Boy acted as a promoter on approximately 206 events. I'd also add that they've appeared about half a dozen cases in this jurisdiction. These are just some of the facts that demonstrate that Golden Boy's claim that Nevada is not a convenient form is simply beyond the pale. The trial court did not weigh these factors because it first determined that the promotional rights term sheet, the agreement upon which appellant sued in this case, was no longer enforceable. The court erred by not giving Pound for Pound great deference. A Nevada corporation, not giving great deference to its venue choice, and finding instead that the venue provision of the executive term sheet controlled. The court, in our opinion, committed prejudicial error. The court was faced with two competing form selection clauses. Where a trial court is faced with two competing constructions of documents containing irreconcilable form selection clauses, the trial court should defer to the construction that supports the venue choice of the Nevada corporation. This is particularly true where the opposing party was the drafter of the documents, as is in this case. Here, the district court failed to do so. Instead, it viewed the competing clauses and constructions and contradictory factual evidence and adopted a construction that defeated the reasonable construction of the clauses as read by the Nevada plaintiff.
Mr. Little, I have a couple of questions,
yes, sir,
if I may interrupt you.
Please.
The first is, I was under the impression, and I'm glad we argued this case, that both parties thought that the term sheet the district court concluded had terminated, had indeed terminated. Is that the position of both parties, or at least?
No, it is not, Your Honor. Thank you for asking.
The term termination provisions are different in the two term sheets,
yes,
at least the circumstances that give rise to termination. But could you comment on that issue, and then I have a second question for you about the alleged forum selection clauses.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, U.S. So with respect to the promotional rights term sheet, it on its face has a five-bout guarantee. And so the district court determined that the five bouts had been fulfilled, and therefore it had terminated.
Well, I think it says it or renewed.
That's correct.
Was there any act or event in the record in the record that showed any termination of that agreement, other than the later assertion that there was a breach.
No, Your Honor. In fact, the conduct of the parties showed that, in fact, the promotional rights term sheet had been extended at least four times. Mr. Mosley fought an additional four bouts under that agreement, totaling nine bouts. Hmm. And so the conduct of the parties showed that that agreement not only could be extended, on its face it says so, but in fact it was.
So other than conduct, is there any writing that shows the extension of the agreement of the first term sheet?
Your Honor, it's not in evidence in this case, but as a boxing attorney myself, I know that when you do it about, as they did in this case, there would have been bout agreements.
Well, we can't.
Those additional bouts.
The record doesn't show that here.
That is correct.
So there's no writing, but your point is, I mean, the conduct of subsequent bouts is in the record, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor.
All right.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And then my other question is this. To get to the heart of this issue, there seems to be some jurisprudence or case decisions that conclude that a forum selection clause in one contract and an arbitration clause in another contract really are not in conflict. Arbitration isn't necessarily a forum selection, it's a disposition selection. So I'm hoping both parties will address the legal question about whether these are truly conflicting. And under White Main, we have said that competing term sheets, if they reference one another, are essentially a single contract. Those, to me, are two pretty important issues in resolving this question.
Sure, Your Honor. I'll take the first question first. With respect to the two different clauses, it's our contention that under, I believe it's Batista, you have to have an adequate alternate form. And so if the case goes to California, it's very possible that the statute of limitation in California precludes this case. Now, I understand the two different issues, choice of law versus venue. But we do have a concern that California may, if in fact the arbitrator applies California law and completely disregards the promotional rights term sheet with respect to the application of Nevada law, that in fact it could be time barred.
Well, that's a consequence, but that doesn't address the legal analysis that's been offered in some cases that an ARB clause in one document and a forum selection clause in another document that's considered part of the same contract really are not competing forum selection clauses. So if this court, we need to take on that issue. So what analysis should we give to that? Are they in fact competing or not?
It would be our position, Your Honor, that they are, number one, they are competing.
So why?
Yeah.
Why are they, not because you might get bounced on a statute of limitations, why would we view these as being a competing forum?
Sure. I would only argue, Your Honor, because the promotional rights term sheet is very clear that it is a mandatory, not a permissive, is a mandatory forum and choice of law clause that, in our opinion, in the promotional rights term sheet, is the controlling overarching term sheet.
Well, so could you even, if you went to California and arbitrated, could you enforce or challenge the arbitration award in Nevada court thereafter? I'm not sure the Uniform Arbitration Act permits that.
Yeah. That I don't know.
Okay. In that case, there would be a conflict between the two clauses.
There would be. We do have concern. We find that they are competing. And we find that because primarily we believe that there's an exclusive mandatory provision and plaintiff should be given deference as a Nevada corporation, as a local plaintiff. All right. May I continue? I don't think I got your second part of your question today.
I don't believe you did. I'll repeat it.
Please.
We have a case in Nevada, White Mane, that talks about two separate documents and in a court's assessment of whether it's a single contract. That case offers principles and factors that one should apply. I don't see where the district court did that here, but I don't know whether the parties even argued it in the court below. Could you go into that, please?
Absolutely. Thank you, Your Honor. I'm not familiar with that case, but I will tell you factually speaking. Both term sheets contemplate separate and distinct services for Mr. Mosley. While they were both entered into at the same time, at the same place, they both cover very distinct services. The promotion rights term sheet is specific to Mr. Mosley's personal services as a boxer. Under the executive term sheet, refers to Mr. Mosley as an executive to Golden Boy, who is then also providing boxers to the company. Completely different services, completely different intents, completely different tracks in terms of one being fulfilled and one not being fulfilled. In fact, we argue that they are one overarching agreement as compared to my opponent, who believes that they're two separate agreements. We believe they're one overarching agreement. And in fact, the equity that Mr. Mosley has earned in Golden Boy does not happen but for those two agreements being considered together.
Well, and they reference each other.
They do. And they rely on each other as well.
Okay. But did you raise the White Mane case in the district court?
No, sir.
But you did argue that that these documents should be treated as a single contract?
That is the basis of our argument, yes, sir.
Was it in the district court?
Yes, it was. It was in the pleadings, yes, sir.
All right. Hmm.
I think I've got just 3 minutes left, and so I think I'm going to wrap up quickly.
Yeah, you're in your rebuttal time.
Yes, I am, so I'll end here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'd like to just echo Mr. Little's comments that we do enjoy a very cordial relationship. I would also like to thank you all for allowing us to come here and argue before you in this wonderful new courtroom that you have here. Let me begin by addressing Justice Hardesty's, a couple of his questions. The first question is, there really is not a conflict in this case, certainly, between the Nevada choice of forum provision in the promotional term sheet and the California arbitration clause in the executive term sheet. The reason for that is the claims that fall within each of those two clauses are distinct. The promotional rights term sheet forum selection clause makes very clear that it is only claims that arise under that particular term sheet and the rights and obligations of the parties under that term sheet. And that term sheet is very clear, as Mr. Little commented. It relates only to Mr. Mosley's services as a boxer and Golden Boy's obligations to promote his fights and to arrange his fights and pay him his purses and do all of those things. It says nothing about Mr. Mosley's obligations as an executive for Golden Boy, what compensation he will earn for those services, nor does it say anything about equity in Golden Boy at all. It doesn't mention shares of Golden Boy. It doesn't mention earning stock at all. By contrast, the arbitration clause in the executive right term sheet refers to all disputes among the parties will be sent to arbitration in California. Those two provisions can be read to mean that all disputes, except for the one narrow category of disputes relating to the promotion of Mosley's bouts, go to California arbitration. Those disputes relating to Mosley's bouts will be litigated here in Nevada, because Nevada, as the boxing mecca of the world, is best suited to address claims regarding boxing promotion. That's what the intent of the parties as reflected in the agreements is. And here, the claims at issue in the case relate solely to whether Golden Boy properly redeemed Mr. Mosley's shares as a result of the claimed breach of the executive rights term sheet.
But if we were to disagree with you and under White Main, credit your opponent's position, which is this is all one agreement and you therefore have conflicts in these two clauses, would you agree that the clauses are in fact in conflict? Because if you arbitrate in California, you would have to either enforce or challenge that award in a California court. How could you come to Nevada under Nevada's Uniform Arbitration Act and bring a California arbitration award to Nevada court and enforce it?
Well, two things. First of all, even if you consider them all one agreement, the analysis that I just described, I think, still applies. So I don't believe that the
authority... Yeah, I understand that. My question was inartful. I'm focused on, is there an absolute conflict if you credit the position that they're one and the same and this should go to arbitration in California if you're going to give preference to the arb clause, but that on review of the arb clause, where would you go? You'd go to California court, correct?
I don't believe that's required, Your Honor.
Okay.
I believe the Nevada courts would have jurisdiction to enforce or set aside any arbitration award that would be rendered by the California arbitration.
Well, Justice Pickering's point is pretty significant, but I don't recall that being briefed in the court below or here.
It wasn't. It wasn't raised below, and it wasn't raised in the briefs here. But this arbitration...
But it makes a difference to this case, what the law is on that point, right?
Well, I don't think it does, because I don't think that there's actually a conflict, because I don't think there's any reasonable construction of these two agreements or this one agreement, whichever way you want to look at it, that creates a conflict between the two clauses.
Right.
But even if there were to be considered a conflict between the two clauses, this arbitration would be an arbitration between a California entity and a California/Nevada entity regarding the boxing services of Shane Mosley, which have happened all over the United States, which clearly implicates interstate commerce, so it would be governed by the Federal Arbitration Act. And the Federal Arbitration Act would then provide that any court having jurisdiction over the parties would be an appropriate court to enforce or challenge an arbitration award rendered in any state in the country. So the
Well, yeah, except Section 6.5 of the term sheet directs that the arbitration will be conducted under the American Arbitration Association rules.
That's the,
not the FAA.
The arbitration rules govern the actual, you know, proceedings within the arbitration. That's, you know, what discovery you're going to get, what depositions you're going to get, the briefing, all of that, the procedures within the particular arbitration. The question of taking that arbitration award and enforcing it...
Does the last sentence of 6.5 address Justice Pickering's question? Either party may bring an action in any competent jurisdiction if necessary to compel arbitration under this arbitration provision to obtain preliminary relief in support of claims to be prosecuted in arbitration or to enforce an arbitration award.
It does. Exactly.
But could a Nevada court, state court, order arbitration in California?
Yeah, I believe a Nevada state court could enforce a California arbitration provision and say...
Under the strength of this clause.
Right, because the clause says any court having
competent jurisdiction, and therein lies the rub. It may be circular, I don't
know. No, I don't think it is, because the question of whether the courts in Nevada have... Obviously, jurisdiction presents two questions, personal jurisdiction over the parties, which... We don't dispute...
Nobody's disputing.
Correct. We don't dispute that Nevada has jurisdiction over Golden Boy. They obviously are subject to Nevada jurisdiction because they're a Nevada corporation. The question then becomes subject matter jurisdiction. If they file a lawsuit for breach of contract, claiming breach of contract, and they properly serve Golden Boy, The courts in the state of Nevada have jurisdiction over that subject matter. They're courts of general jurisdiction, and they have jurisdiction over the parties. Therefore, they're going to have jurisdiction over that issue. We could bring a motion to enforce the arbitration clause here in Nevada, and the
but
courts
you didn't, right? Your motion was a motion of forum non motion.
Correct. It was a motion to dismiss for forum non on the grounds that the arbitration clause, and we cite cases in our briefs that stand for the proposition that a mandatory arbitration clause is the equivalent of a mandatory forum selection clause because it is the parties choosing the forum in which they are going to litigate their case. And so we brought it as a forum non-motion because...
But did you do more than... Have you waived arbitration in that context? I mean, it's an interesting problem because...
We have...
You've enlarged your rights. If you've got a, if they've got a statute of limitations problem and you're getting a determination that that clause controls and the dispute arises under the executive term sheet or vice versa, whichever one it is, have you strengthened your legal hand without asking for arbitration at the first available instance by bringing this motion instead of a motion to compel arb, which you just told me a moment ago could be brought in Nevada?
Right. I don't think we've strengthened our hand, to directly answer your question. I don't think there's a significant legal difference between having brought a motion to compel arbitration to enforce the arbitration provision in the executive rights term sheet and having brought a motion to dismiss on forum non-convenience grounds on the basis that that same provision is a forum selection clause. Either one of those motions would require the court to determine whether that clause governs the claims of the parties.
Right, but if you'd moved to compel arbitration, Nevada would have retained jurisdiction while arbitration was compelled or not?
Well, I think the court could have retained jurisdiction. Yeah. I don't think it would have been required to. I think it could have dismissed
to let the arbitration. Yeah.
Correct. It could have retained jurisdiction to let the arbitration go forward and then come back here to enforce. But by dismissing, it's a dismissal without prejudice. It doesn't preclude them after the arbitration from coming back here to litigate the question of whether that arbitration award is proper.
Mr. Sestro, what is your position about whether the first agreement terminated, or are these agreements one and the same? They're two different documents with part of a single contract under White Main.
The first agreement clearly terminated, Your Honor.
Well, what about counsel's observation about subsequent conduct that seems to be in conformance with the first agreement?
Well, first of all, I don't think it was in conformance with the first agreement because, as counsel has repeatedly argued and has pleaded specifically in paragraph 12 and thereafter in their complaint, after the fifth fight, Golden Boy no longer had the exclusive right to promote Mr. Mosley's fights. They did continue to promote, Golden Boy did continue to promote Mr. Mosley's fights on a fight-by-fight basis. Mm-hmm. And that is specifically what is alleged in the complaint, that they continued to operate on a fight-by-fight basis. But that's different in kind and substance than an exclusive promotional rights contract where Golden Boy gets the right exclusively to promote all of Mr. Mosley's bouts.
Well, so what were the contract terms of fights 6 through 9?
They were set forth in the bout agreements that, as Mr. Little correctly
knows... But those are not in the record.
Those are not in the record, and nor are they a term promotional contract which gives Golden Boy the right to promote exclusively a series or a slate of Mr. Mosley's fights. They are fight-by-fight contracts that are recorded with the relevant state athletic commission.
Well, I realize we don't have those, but Mr. Little is correct in his representation, I presume, that these fights were promoted. We don't know what those documents address specifically as to those fights, but was there any difference from the terms that are contained in this term sheet with respect to those subsequent fights? Did the share change? Did the compensation change?
Well, what I can tell you is what is in the record is that he did not receive any equity in Golden Boy beyond the fifth fight.
Mm-hmm.
What is in the record is that he earned his complete equity in Golden Boy after the fifth fight. In fact, what's in the record is that we actually gave it to him a little bit early, after he had completed three fights, because we felt the relationship was going well enough that we gave him the full 5% at that point. That is in the record.
So let me ask you this. If this case were arbitrated in California, would Nevada or California law apply?
We would argue that California law applies.
Sure you would, because paragraph 12 of the term sheet that we're talking about requires that all these disputes be governed under Nevada law. So the issue about whether this is one and the same contract or a separate contract has extensive consequences to the ongoing litigation in this case.
The question of whether...
Because I don't see a choice of law in the subsequent term sheet.
There is. It's under the arbitration clause, I believe, says that it should be conducted in California under California law. Or that might be in the stock branch agreement. That may not be
in the executive term sheet.
That could be in the stock branch agreement. You're right. That's
yeah,
possible.
It's not in the executive.
Yeah. At least, the copy I have. We had portions of the agreements copied for argument. But I didn't have time to read the entire provisions.
So the question of whether Nevada law or California law applies will have to be litigated regardless of the forum in which this case goes forward.
Well, I guess the concern I have, though, is the district court in this case said that the first agreement terminated.
Correct.
I'm not sure that analysis is accurate. Okay. And there seems like there should be a lot of other information developed in the record below on that point under the Whitemane case to determine whether or not we're dealing with a single contract or, as the district court had originally concluded, a separate one.
I don't think that's right, and let me tell you why.
Okay.
Number one, paragraph 41.
You don't think it was right?
That there's any scenario under which the promotional term sheet continues,
okay,
and was in force in effect at the date we terminated.
Okay.
Okay. And here's why. Paragraph 41 of the complaint, they allege specifically that when Mosley decided to take the Manny Pacquiao fight, he effected a termination of the promotional rights term sheet.
I see.
That was before we terminated the executive rights term sheet portion. So therefore, under his own allegation in paragraph 41 of the complaint, the promotional rights term sheet was done, it was over at the time we terminated.
Well, but that doesn't necessarily terminate the choice of law clause or the choice of forum clause, even if the contract were terminated, if you treat these two as one contract. I mean, the problem I've got analytically, and the briefing is a bit incomplete, is if you treat these all as one, we have a Nevada choice of law clause in this contract to a dispute. Even if the contract terminates, both of you are saying you breached, you didn't have the right to do what you did with the Pacquiao fight, and they're saying no, you terminated and you terminated wrongly or whatever. But those are disputes about a terminated contract. The contract survives to the extent it specifies choice of law or choice of forum, ordinarily, it's all one.
Well, but that choice of law and choice of forum provision only applies if the dispute arises in connection with the services that are provided under the promotional rights portion.
That's your read of that.
I mean, yes, I don't believe there's any other reasonable construction of that provision, because the arising hereunder language refers to that promotional rights portion of the term sheet, and the complaint makes 100% clear that the only dispute in this case is whether Lafoy had the right to redeem the shares for $1,000 or whether Golden Boy had to redeem the shares for fair market value. That issue can only be determined by looking at the executive rights term sheet and paragraph 5.3 of the executive rights term sheet, or its related agreement, the stock rate agreement. So the question is not whether Golden Boy breach the contract by redeeming the shares at all, there's no question that Mosley's termination of the contract, admitted termination of the contract in paragraph 41, gave Golden Boy the right to redeem the shares. The only question is how much they had to pay for them. And you can't get to that by looking at the promotional rights term, because there's nothing within that document that even references stock, let alone how much to pay for a redemption.
We understand your point. You're at the end of your argument.
May I ask one additional question?
Yes.
We have talked a lot about facts surrounding the two documents. This case raises another significant legal question. Under what portion of Rule 12 do we examine a motion to dismiss should the court have considered evidence outside the pleadings, limited its review to the pleading itself? What is the standard of review in this context? Now, for rule nerds like Justice Pickering, this is a significant question. What say you on that point, if the judge would, if Justice Pickering would allow the question?
You may answer.
Thank you. This court has determined both in the Placer Dome decision and in the Tuxedo International decision that a forum non-convenience motion goes, and including a motion to enforce a forum selection clause, goes outside of the pleadings. The court must consider the affidavits of the parties and the evidence concerning the circumstances of what the conduct alleged is and where it's alleged to occur. In particular, the Tuxedo International case, which deals with the question of whether a contractual form selection clause applies to related tort claims, talks about the necessity of reviewing not just the contract, but the alleged conduct that gives rise to the tort claim and whether that falls within the rights and obligations of the contract. So, as a form selection clause, we are not bound by the rules of a 12b-5 motion. We are not limited solely to the pleadings. But I know that even under the 12b-5 rules, your honors are entitled to, and the courts are entitled to, look at the terms of the contract that is pleaded to be at issue in the case. And their allegations regarding the meaning of the contract are legal conclusions that the courts are not bound by. So our position is that the language of the contract is clear, that the executive rights term sheet is what's at issue here, and therefore that provision controls. That can be determined even if you were going to follow the 12b-5 standards, which I don't think you're limited to those standards given the nature of this motion.
Thank you. Thank you. You're out of time.
Yes.
I have a question just about the record, and if you don't have it at hand, you all can submit a supplement. The only copy we have of the promotional rights term sheet that I could find is AA103 to AA107, and it's a fax copy and very difficult to read. Some of the other provisions in it aren't reprinted in the briefs, and if there's a better copy in the record, please provide the citation to us.
Okay. I don't think there is. I noted that as I was preparing for the hearing as well. I don't believe that there's a cleaner copy in the record, but we can.
Thank you. We went over time with him, so I'm going to give you an additional 3 minutes on your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't think I need to take the whole 3 minutes, but I certainly appreciate it.
Well, you have six, so.
Indeed, wow. I would simply say, first and foremost, I thank you for the questions. It's just really propelled this matter forward, and I think in a very constructive way. I do want to emphasize that this matter was brought by Pound for Pound out of Mr. Mosley making an announcement that he was going to fight Manny Pacquiao. That relates exclusively to his boxing services, which could have been done under the promotional rights agreement. So this dispute arises out of the promotional rights agreement. And then, as a follow-on to that decision, a business decision that Mr. Mosley was able to make because he was no longer, quote-unquote, exclusively promoting by Golden Boy. He was able to make that decision. When Golden Boy didn't like the decision, they then terminated under, and we believe under pretext, under the executive term sheet, and paid him $1,000 in exchange for 5% of the boxing's.
But based on the argument you're making, Mr. Little, why did you allege in paragraph 41 of the complaint that the first agreement had terminated?
Your Honor, that's not.
It seems like an inconsistent position.
Yeah. I'd have to review that paragraph, Your Honor, but it's not our position that the agreement was terminated. It would be our position that Mr. Mosley had fulfilled his five bouts under that agreement. And in addition to that, whether it's terminated or not, the choice of law and choice of venue still remain. Okay? I'd also suggest that, if the court, we would be happy to brief on the white name issue as well. And that's all I have.
Do you have a better citation? Is there a better copy of the promotional term sheet than the one I asked you?
There is a better copy, Your Honor.
In the record?
But it is not in the record. No, okay. I just
confirmed. We're stuck with the record that we have.
I'm sorry.
Well, perhaps. And I would offer this, since you all are getting along so famously, it is entirely possible you would stipulate to a copy of the damn agreement we could read. How about that?
I think we could accomplish that.
Whoa. Thank you.
The executive term sheet is legible. The promotional is a challenge.
Would the court like to suggest a time frame to receive?
Tomorrow.
Okay. You'll have it.
Very well.
Thank you.
Thank counsel for their arguments. This matter will stand submitted and we'll be at ease while the next group of lawyers come forward. Thank you very much.